This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. Our radio program is heard on Pacifica stations nationwide, and our TV show can be viewed on Free Speech TV and on our website. Nearly a quarter of a million people are expected to attend the Women's March on Washington, D.C. this Saturday, January 21st, a day after the most unpopular president in U.S. history is inaugurated. The number of marchers is expected to outnumber inauguration attendees by 10 to 1. More than 600 sister marches have been planned in cities around the country. The marches are largely a response to Donald Trump's ugly presidential campaign and the hateful and racist anti-immigrant and anti-woman rhetoric he spouted and has encouraged. Among those attending the DC march is my guest, Kshama Sawant. She is the Seattle City Council member that's well known to progressives around the country for being the first socialist council member to be elected. She's affiliated with the Socialist Alternative Party. Welcome to the program, Kshama Sawant.
Thank you for having me, Sonali.
Last time we had you on, it was soon after the election, and we had been talking about the racist attacks that you had faced for speaking out, for speaking at a march against Trump very soon after the election. Let me begin by asking you whether that targeting has eased up and what the last couple of last month or so for you has been like.
Thank you for asking me about that. Yes, as you said, it was the day after the election results were announced that Socialist Alternative called for mass protests that evening, the following evening, in many different cities, including Seattle, but also in Philadelphia, Boston, and New York. And we had collectively more than 50,000 people show up in those protests. And as you said, at those protests, we talked about how it is absolutely critical that all the people in the 99% get united to fight against Trump's racist and misogynist agenda and his anti-worker agenda, and also fight against neoliberalism, because you can't fight the right wing without fighting neoliberalism and vice versa. And we did get a barrage of right-wing attacks that has eased up now, but I would imagine that it will, the polarization will be heightened on the inauguration weekend, which is all the more reason that those of us who have a vision for American society that is completely different than the one espoused by Trump and his supporters, then we need to show up there, make our voices be heard, and say that we stand against racism, against sexism, against bigotry, and that we stand with immigrants, Muslims, and with all workers.
And so obviously the attacks you faced have not discouraged you in the least. Tell us about the organizing you've been doing in Seattle in direct response to the Trump presidency, the upcoming inauguration. I understand that there are events happening all week this week and on the day of the inauguration, the day after as well?
Yes, actually, as it so happens, in Seattle, we have no Republican force to speak off. I am one socialist, and all the other city council members are Democrats. And in this situation, actually, in Seattle, we have one socialist and movement builders and activists have won critical gains for renters and for homeless people this past year. It's an example of how corporate Democrats don't stand with us either, and we have to build movements on the ground independent of the corporate parties and really move our social justice and pro-worker agenda forward. And so what's happened is that my office has been really trying to empower coalitions of activists and grassroots people, just regular people, young people, working people, around those issues of renters' rights and the rights of homeless people. And those coalitions now are starting to come together as a coalition, as Seattle's coalition to resist Trump. And it's been incredible how much energy we have behind it. We were able to organize the first coalition meeting just before the December holidays, and it was incredible to see how much determination there is among just ordinary working people to fight against the right-wing agenda. And through this coalition, what we are doing all of this week is trying to dot the whole city of Seattle with posters of a rally that we're going to be hosting at 5 p.m. at a prominent downtown location on Inauguration Day on Friday. And most importantly, what's happening on Friday is also that we know that probably tens of thousands of Seattle high school students and college students will be courageously walking out from their classes. They will be joining our protest. And I just wanted to highlight, Sonari, something that happened this weekend, just on Saturday. You know, we hosted a town hall where 300 people showed up, you know, to plan the protest of this coming weekend. But something else that happened is, I think, deserves highlighting. The Seattle Public Schools, the board that controls the district, public school district, issued a really threatening letter saying that if students are going to walk out, they will probably be penalized with unexcused absences. And the most ominous thing about this letter from Seattle Public Schools says that they will be coordinating with the police department, which is under the consent decree of the Department of Justice for racially biased policing and excessive use of force. So this is a really bad move from the Seattle Public Schools authority. And so we, my office and other activists, we are signing a petition saying that the public school district should withdraw these statements and actually support the students in these historic protests. And the other thing that we're going to be doing while I'm in Seattle is I will be, along with Jill Stein, issuing a response to Donald Trump's inauguration address. So I will be presenting a socialist response to Donald Trump's inauguration address, and we're hoping to broadcast that live as well.
Wow. You've just detailed what's happening in Seattle. Here in Los Angeles, where I'm based, there are tens of thousands of people expected to march, and I mentioned 600 plus sister marches to the DC march happening around the country. Let's talk about DC. You're going to be heading to Washington, DC, along with many, many people. It's a women's march, but of course, there's going to be plenty of men and children too. And so far, I see more than 200,000 people have registered to attend. Why are you going to Washington, D.C., Kshama Sawant? Why is this march so important? Some people have worried that it's so big that it might be too big. Maybe it has an agenda that's too broad. How do you assess it?
I think this weekend is going to be a time when ordinary people who are fed up with the corporate domination of politics, who know full well that Trump does not in any way represent our interests as working people, as students, as women, as the LGBTQ community, and as immigrants and Muslims. And so it's critical that we all show up there in big numbers. And I would say there is nothing is too big. I mean, if we're going to be protesting for a truly just society, then what is big? If nothing is big enough, we should be showing up in great numbers. And I hope that we have like a 500,000 strong protest in DC. And as you said, there's going to be sister marches in many different cities. In Seattle, we're expecting 50,000 people to show up here in support of women's rights, but more broadly against Trump's right-wing agenda. And I will be flying, as you said, I will be going to DC Friday night. I will be there at the women's march on Saturday. I think that it's really important we all participate in this historic moment. This is not a moment for anybody who cares about social justice in any form to be standing on the sidelines. As a matter of fact, talking about broadness, we need as broad as possible of a movement, a unified movement of the 99% against Trump's agenda, against the billionaires whom he has amassed in his cabinet, who we know are deeply hostile to the interests of workers, to the interests of immigrants, labor unions, and people of color and women. And we cannot stand aside at this moment and let them have even an inch. As a matter of fact, it's really telling that Trump, I think in the history of US presidency, has the least level of popularity for a president in a pre-inauguration week. Even George W. Bush had a greater popularity rating. That shows you that his agenda does not represent the agenda of ordinary people. And so to that end, that evening at 5:30 on Saturday, January 21st, I will also be participating in a panel discussion that will draw out a debate about what is the way forward. Is it going to be enough for us in any way to tie ourselves, to tie our movement to the Democratic Party and just, you know, stick with this two-party solution that has actually not provided a real resolution to our problems. Inequality is the greatest it's ever been. I'm sure you heard that Oxfam is now reporting that eight individuals have as much wealth as the bottom half of the world's population. This is sheer insanity, not to mention the threat of climate change. That is why I think it's really important that we have an open and clear debate about what is our way forward and why movements need to be independent. Just one example to mention, when we had the largest ever protest in presidential inauguration, the last time, that was when Richard Nixon was reelected. And Nixon, on paper, even though he was a racist, warmongering bigot, on paper, he's the most progressive president. EPA was passed under his regime. The Vietnam War was ended. The Occupational Safety and Health Act was passed. And Roe v. Wade for abortion rights was also passed by the Supreme Court. That was not because of him, but that was because movements decided that tying yourself to one of these two corporate parties is not working. We have to be independent. And that is when historic victories were achieved. I really hope that people take Trump's election, and I know that they are right now, sort of as a wake-up call that, you know, this is a historic moment for us to be joining our voices in the 99% for a vision that is completely different than what Trump is advancing.
Right, and many people don't remember Nixon actually came closest to even espousing a universal basic income here in the United States. On the Oxfam report, that's right. Actually our next story during this show. We'll be covering that terrible report, or the report that reveals something terrible about our world economy. So let's talk about how important cultural resistance is to Trump. One of the things that has come up, you know, between the election and now, and really even before the election, was the incredible artistic response to the Trump presidency. A lot of women have been knitting pink hats. There's the Pussy Hat Project. I don't know if you're going to be donning a knitted pink hat with cat ears. You know, there's some argument about, well, that takes away from the seriousness of the march. But a lot of artists have come forward, and there have been sign-making parties being held in cities around the country this week in preparation. A lot of creativity. Is that crucial to this movement?
I think a cultural resistance is inextricable from a political resistance. I'm so glad you brought this point up. I mean, in Seattle, we've done similar things. We've had small businesses come to my office. I'm a socialist. Come up to me and say, how can we help this resistance? Can we host sign-making parties? So, in fact, we've started to spread the word, asking other small businesses to join in and, you know, join this coffee shop that approached us and say, you know, also you should organize your sign-making party. On Saturday after the town hall, we played the Seahawks game, you know, the football game, and the people were there in City Hall making signs. Actually, right here where I sit, I have a bunch of picket signs, sitting to my left that we're going to be using for the protest rally. And I think that this sort of cultural and artistic resistance throughout history has played a really important role in bringing people together who, to begin with, may not have seen their common interests. And I think that message of a unified resistance among the 99%, understanding who's on your side and who's not, is going to be a critical part of political education of this era. And I think the cultural and artistic aspects really help us to help bind the social element together. And I think that ultimately people are going to see, as some of our activist ancestors saw, is that we as working people, as Muslims, as people of all ethnicities, people of all skin colors, people of all gender identifications, people of all sexual orientations, we have to come together because our interests are tied together. And also at the same time, understand who's not on our side. The right wing is not on our side. I mean, we should take that as an ominous wake-up call. Trump is not on our side. His billionaire-backed cabinet is very much hostile to our interests. And at the end of the day, any party that primarily, despite differences in rhetoric, advocates for the interests of Wall Street is not on our side. I'm sure your viewers and listeners saw that when Sanders brought forward an amendment for making prescription drugs affordable by allowing households to legally import them from Canada, there were 13 Democrats just last week, 13 Democrats voted against an amendment. Cory Booker from New Jersey and the two senators from Washington State, Patty Murray and Maria Cantwell, voted against it. And these are some of the biggest beneficiaries of Big Pharma. So I think that it should be striking to all of us that at the same time that the Affordable Care Act, which despite its flaws, has expanded access to healthcare for millions of people, at the same time that the ACA is on the chopping block right directly by the Republicans. I mean, they are going on an all-out unapologetic assault on the Affordable Care Act. At the same time that that's happening, corporate Democrats are putting every foot forward in order to defeat any measure against big insurance and big pharma. And that shows one thing only. It does not show that the Democrats are the same as Republicans. Of course not. There are differences. But it shows that a bigger priority for the Democrats than defeating Trump's agenda is making sure that a working class agenda does not permeate that party. And that is why I think it's important for us to reflect on this question. You know, does the way forward show, you know, does that way forward appear to us by tying ourselves to the Democrats, or do movements now as we build a mass resistance against Trump, if we build them independent of the corporate parties, what is the potential for serious success in taking society forward?
Right. And sadly, because of the sort of symbolic difference between Obama and Trump, you have this very, you know, intellectual, polished, graceful, well-spoken person against this very crass and overtly misogynist, racist person. There's been a lot of, I think, nostalgia for Obama and by extension for the Democrats among many of the same people who are going to be attending these anti-inauguration protests. And so I think holding up the flaws of the Democratic Party becomes more important than ever, given that the fairly qualified Democrat was unable to beat one of the least qualified, perhaps the least qualified person in history, probably because of the bankruptcy of her ideas. So Kshama Sawant, I wish you the best of luck after you're on that panel in DC in terms of the strategy sessions. I would love to have you back on to talk about the way forward. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
My guest is Kshama Sawant. She is the Seattle City Council member who became the first socialist to be elected to that body affiliated with the Socialist Alternative Party. She's going to be heading to the march on Washington, D.C., the Women's March, this weekend. You can find out more about that march as well as about the sister marches at womensmarch.com. There are more than 600 sister marches happening around the country. We'll be bringing you a special report from the Los Angeles March. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can find our interviews online at risingupwithsonali.com, as well as subscribe to our podcast on iTunes.